episode 421 of the Anarchist News Podcast, a digest and or conversations on anarchist activity, ideas, and comments from the previous week on anarchistnews.org. This is for the week of June 21st through June 27th, 2025. What's new this week? Anarchist Alexei Rozhkov sentenced to 16 years for setting fire to a military enlistment office from Avtonom. Quote, Rozhkov carried out the third known arson attack on a military enlistment office following the full-scale invasion of Ukraine by the Russian army. He committed the act on March 11, 2022, as a form of protest and a way to draw attention to the situation, unquote. A tale of the state changing rules and applying punishments retroactively, as they are always able to do, gives the mailing address for Rozhkov as well as helpful tips on what to write and how to write it.
I couldn't watch people die in silence. The story of Alexei Rozhkov. From Novaya Gazeta Europe by Olyasa Krivtsova. More of the backstory of Rozhkov, his reasoning, his escape, and his illegal recapture. How they tortured him, and other details, touching and or infuriating, about his experience. Links given to give money to help him pay for legal fees.
Anonymous communique from some anarchists in Bulbanka. From the Dirty South at dirtysouth.noblogs.org. This is pretty much the full post. Quote, on the eve of Day of Solidarity with Anarchist Prisoners, June 11th, under a full moon, we disabled 10 police surveillance cameras here in New Orleans. We're inspired by the uprising in Los Angeles, by Wilani Forest defenders facing repression in Georgia, by all people under occupation fighting to be free. We encourage like-minded folks to find each other in the night and attack. For the wild joy, for the burning rage, for Mother Earth. Fuck City Council and their facial recognition bullshit. Fuck the police. Fuck a peaceful protest. There is no peace. Free Palestine. Free Turtle Island. Free Planet Earth. Unquote.
The return of autonomous demonstrations in Philadelphia from Philly Any Capitalist. An old head celebrates street actions in Philly that were not organized by managers. Quote, as an older anarchist, I was glad to see younger comrades organizing against ICE in a militant fashion. It is a rare thing to see publicly organized autonomous demonstrations in the United States, despite the fact that they are common in places like Latin America or Europe. Autonomous demonstrations are critical for real combative street movements. For over a decade, the activist organizer culture has plagued Philadelphia's street movements with their cowardice and liberalism. The tension between the militant and the activist played out in the meeting, communique, and even in the streets. Organizers have often played a counterinsurgent role in various struggles such as anti-gentrification direct actions from 2013 to 2018, Occupy ICE in 2018, the George Floyd uprising, the Eddie Irizarry uprising, and the Palestine solidarity encampments. Unquote. The author also rejects the argument of a socialist article on the recent Philly protests.
Fundraising for the defense of anarchist Ruslan Siddiqui from Avtonom. Quote, on May 23rd, anarchist Ruslan Siddiqui was sentenced to a record-breaking 29 years in prison. He received his sentence for two acts of sabotage against military infrastructure, blowing up a railway track and carrying out a drone attack on an airfield. Ruslan explained his actions as an attempt to hinder attacks on Ukraine, unquote. This piece includes more information about Siddiqui's experiences, including torture in prison, and he needs even more money for legal fees than Rozhkov does. There are links here to donate and his snail mail address. As always, for Russian prisoners, translate your letters into Russian.
Intention, Issue 3, from intention.noblogs.org. Table of contents includes confrontation in the age of surveillance, setting our own priorities, info about June 11, how to make asphalt mosaics, which I for one have never heard of before, the beginning of a new quote-unquote lexicon segment starting with the word vegan. Sadly, the explanation here is all pro-vegan, so there's no information on any of the valid pushback against purity thinking, lifestyle oversimplification, cultural blinders, etc. Taking a side doesn't have to mean underplaying one's opposition, but moving on. Other articles are on unpacking queer joy, challenging the joy that comes from status quo pursuits, gentrification, a piece called Strategies for Safer Travel, and one on a local graffiti writer, among others. Some theory and some fun. This reader looks forward to this developing.
Athens, information about the new prosecution and court case against us from Anon. Lambros, Vau Geoclacus, Paniogaitis, Vau Gleococcus, and Photos Daskalis write about their situation. Quote, a year later, we are now called as defendants in this case with the court on June 24, 2025, with charges of the possession and use of explosive mechanisms, arson, and causing an explosion. Naturally, the obsession of the cops and judicial authorities against us does not surprise us. The state attempts to terrorize us and our comrades with these practices, forgetting that, unlike them, we have chosen dignity as our fellow traveler in life. Unquote.
Rodin's Rowdy Rival, from The Guardian, by Christian House. A mainstream sketch about an exhibition from Medardo Rosso. Rosso was an anarchist sculptor who, while influential among some artists, didn't make a mainstream name for himself. Quote, he wanted to control the image, says Filipovic. He understood that photography and how you saw the work was also the work. The exhibition features about 200 of Rosso's photographs, frail prints of sculptures, some as small as stamps, otherworldly portraits rather than iconic marketing shots. He lit and staged them with an ethereal aesthetic that echoed the Victorian craze for spirit photography. Unquote. While the author of this piece seems to think there's something wrong with an artist not valuing exposure and fame over specificity and context, we know better. Right?
Right.
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 Right. Anyway, there's a disappointing lack of pictures of Rosso's works in this Guardian article. They give more space to Rodin for some marketing reason. But the Wikipedia page for Rosso has some nice ones. And there's a page on him on the Museum of Modern Art site that's good too. Hashtag soft spot for sculptures, especially anarchist ones.
International statement, war between states means death for the people, from Black Rose Federation, official anti-stance from the most organizationalist folks you know, absolutely nothing new here, just predictable expressions of outraged jargon, like a homework assignment or something.
ASR 92, Summer 2025, from Anarcho-Syndicalist Review. What other site would pay attention? A bunch of known entities, all dudes for what that's worth, writing about anarchy as if it hasn't changed from what it was 50 years ago. Hell, 70 years ago. More? Oh, and it includes the following article by Wayne Price.
Do anarchists support democracy? The opinion of Errico Malatesta, from Anarcho-Syndicalist Review by Wayne Price. Better title would be The Opinion of Errico Malatesta According to Wayne Price. Price is attached to the word and concept of democracy, and here argues that Malatesta agreed with him, despite Malatesta's article titled Neither Democrats Nor Dictators, Anarchists. Price makes a decent argument given his own reasoning, but given Price's analysis of other situations, it's hard for some of us to take his understanding of Malatesta at face value. The comments are pretty good in this thread, for what that's worth.
Malatesta-ing my patience here. I just thought of that. That was great. The Sparrow's Nest, Preserving Anarchist History in Nottingham, from Travel and Tour World, no author credited. A mainstream piece about an anarchist archive in a person's house, reminding some of us of the good old days of the Kate Sharpley archives in Grass Valley. Speaking of, this article doesn't mention any other archive projects, as if the Sparrow's Nest is the only such project in the UK, which we know is not the case. Probably they're trying to sell something. Anyway, anarchist libraries are cool.
Against War Thinking, from Eco Revolt by Julian Langer. Julian does his normal thing of taking some deep ideas and good writers, mixing them with his thoughts on his own experiences, adding in words he's trying to make popular, and then dumping the resulting jumble onto the page. Quote, this aesthetic and ethic, which is neither pacifism nor militarism, is that which I have articulated best so far in my anti-cull writings as preservationism, as a passionate and defiant yes-saying to life that is wholly absurd, as the preservation of life is impossible, as death and extinction are invariant, In much the sense of Camus' inversion, Moore's eversion, and Deleuze's involution, this is neither the negation nor synthesis of a war-thinking conflict versus peace dialectic, but the turning inside out and collapse of war-thinking into something entirely different, unquote. Maybe if he refers to enough smart people, some of it will rub off someday.
St. Petersburg bookstore manager fined over sale of anarchist memoir from the Moscow Times. No author credited. The bookseller sold, quote, Belarusian anarchist Ihar Alinovich's 2013 memoir, I'm Off to Magadan, which Russian authorities claim was published with support from the U.S.-based Anarchist Black Cross Federation, unquote. You'd think the state would get tired.
Anarchism and Revolutionary Defeatism, from History is What's Happening at historyiswhat.noblogs.org by K.C. Sinclair. A long essay with many past and current examples of militarism that refutes Lenin's idea of no war but the class war. Quote, if ever there is a bleak necessity to join the army, there's never a necessity to paint statism as anarchism. One can simply be honest and admit that they've broken with anarchism because statism is presently the only solution, in one's view. We always need to drink water in order to survive, too, but drinking water does not become any more anarchist the more parched one becomes, and to publicly portray drinking water as anarchist would be to engage in sophistry. All the worse in the case of militarism, something that, unlike water, harms all life on Earth. Neither should it be tolerated for anarchists to lie about anarchism and militarism to other anarchists or the general public in order to generate donations or clout when anarchists are engaging in statist ventures. Unquote. There's a lot of spelling things out here with historical examples and an extensive references list.
Blind the Beast, Operation Hermes, from Anon. No website or contact info given. Most of this write-up is a reminder of all the ways that surveillance is everywhere and terrible. The last two paragraphs are as follows. Quote, we ask, what art can be made from scrap silicon boards or infrared LEDs? What life-saving equipment can be made from waterproof housings? What music can be listened to with leftover transistors and wires? What music videos will be shot on DIY camcorders? What can we do in honor of our liberation when we know we aren't living in a panopticon? Like the legend of Argos Panoptes of ancient Greek mythology, we intend to fight in the name of Hermes to slay the giant. Together, as a faction, we can reclaim our privacy and autonomy. Together, we can blind the beast. Unquote. Emma Ain't Dead in the comments reminds us that, one, there's no need to be coy here. We can call for the destruction of cameras without hiding it in language about art, etc. And two, Camover is an existing project that has been working on this for a while now. Just saying.
Iran, a detailed report on a war and millions fleeing, from Anon at Anarchist Front. A first-person anonymous account of escaping from Tehran before the bombing. This account reminds us that no state is our friend, even or especially when they claim to be acting for our benefit. It gives histories on some Iranian diasporas and info on the relationship of some Iranian media to various political issues, including promoting protests regardless of the danger to participants. So yeah, not the state nor corporate media either. The author here rejects the logic of supporting the Islamic Republic as acting against Israeli war crimes, but don't tell Wayne, it'll just confuse him. The author then explains why they re-entered Tehran after working so hard to escape. Quote, I decided to return to the almost depopulated city of Tehran. At the beginning of this report, I wrote that I hated running away. Besides running away, I also hate being poor. I imagine we are all trapped in a big prison. And I have a duty to do more than run away and be miserable. The communications of the anarchist movement in Iran have been cut off and blocked in a comprehensive manner, and we are in widespread danger. Despite this, it was important for me to return to Tehran and assess the situation, and to be able to communicate with outside Iran in some way, and to be informed of my comrades in various places, and, if necessary, to fight alongside each other. Unquote. This is informative and sad, worth reading if you don't have family or friends talking to you about this already. That was Iran, a detailed report.
Notes toward a decolonial anarchism for Creoles who are neither indigenous nor settler. From The Commoner by Simone Maxillon. I have read various things by Maxillon, who has been a dedicated and consistent librarian for the Anarchist Library for years. I don't remember the pieces, but know that I disagree with him along, if I recall correctly, leftist and organizational lines. So this piece on identity, indigeneity, and colonialism is an exercise, for me at least, in negotiation. I want to both learn more about the Philippines context, the complexity of identity in a terrain with, quote, more than 100 spoken languages, unquote, while being reminded of, and triggered by, what seems to be simplistic identity math that in my life I've seen mostly be unhelpful. Is the identification of a Creole group helpful as an alternative to the binary of indigenous versus settler? Or is it a kind of doubling down on the logic, like the blood quantum forced on indigenous folks in the US? There's definitely a lot of talk about blood in this piece, as determinative of identity. There are some references to quote-unquote relationship to land, but not much clarity about what that really means. This piece raises lots of good questions, both explicitly and implicitly, but is hampered, at least to my understanding, by the jargon that it uses. No comments in this thread yet. It would be nice if some thoughtful people engaged with it. That was Notes Toward a Decolonial Anarchism for Creoles.
Audio and Video, Martyr Culture and the Revolution in Rojava, Part 1 and 2, from Live Like the World is Dying, 1 hour and 36 minutes for 1 and 1 hour and 8 minutes for 2. These are the Sarah Bloom episodes, starting with the charming Bee reading an essay by Bloom called Martyr Culture, and following that with an interview of Sarah, who talks about her experiences in Rojava in the YPJ. On the one hand, this is an endearing first-person account of an exciting, profound, and life-changing experience. On the other hand, this is a sad example of shallow analysis, quote-unquote, maternal patience, quote-unquote, patriarchy denigrates academics, etc. And on either foot, this is a scathing statement about either leftism, whatever groups Bloom was in before this experience, or both. As she, for example, celebrates the option to ask questions of people in authority, quote-unquote, fancy that. It's awesome when people get to encounter and be helpful to really different cultures from what they grew up with, and there's plenty to learn about here, about what it's like to go to Rojava as a young person from the U.S.
Spoke.
And we're talking about the topic of the week, fear and its discontents. How do you deal with fear? I want to do things that I am scared to do. By this, I mean many things. I want to do things that scare me for personal growth because dealing with fear makes me more capable and also more interesting to myself. I want to do things that scare me because I think that those things are challenges to the fucked up society that I live in. I want to do things that scare me because confronting fear with other people is a bonding exercise. But I am not good at doing while afraid. I freeze. I act and look suspicious. One of the things that keeps me from doing things that scare me is the real concern that by messing up, I will hurt my friends. Blowing ourselves up accidentally is only the most obvious example of things to be concerned about / learn from. Please don't be constrained by the obvious. Things I have considered as ways to deal with this: A, start small or smaller. B, practice ahead of time or prepare. C, imagine the worst that could happen and emotionally prepare for it. What is your relationship to fear and what have you done to address it, both that hasn't worked and that has? Oh, if you're never afraid, don't bother to respond. Okay, thanks. And that's that. What do you think?
Yeah, I guess I'll start with just an anecdote as a way to get into thinking about all of this. I have like this kind of like deep pre-literate like rectal fear of bees, specifically like ground wasps. And I thought that like by having a job in the woods, it would help me get around, or like, you know, as the topic of the week writer wrote, it would help me deal with my fear of bees.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't. And I still have, you know, if I'm like walking around and I start feeling the ground beneath me, like quiver with activity, I definitely like bug the fuck out.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've just come to a place of acceptance that being afraid of ground wasps is a response that is sufficient to the threat that they pose to me.
Are you allergic?
No, but I guess this is another way into the topic. I just have like childhood memories of getting swarmed.
Oh.
And like lit up super bad. And even though like in my, you know, whatever, the front part of my brain, I know that it's not going to kill me.
Mm-hmm.
I still have this like, return to my little 5-year-old self reaction, proposing.
Yeah. And maybe I can relate because this probably ages me, but I feel traumatized by the movie My Girl. I don't know if you've seen it, but the spoiler is he dies. Yeah, he dies from a bee sting. I feel like what I think of when you're talking about that is like maybe the way that we talk about fear is kind of the problem. Like you overcome a fear by not being afraid of it anymore. And I don't think it's like that. I think you overcome a fear by not responding to your fear in the same way. Like, right? Like you see a ground wasp, you're still able to work outside and you're afraid, but you can function, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think that when we put too much emphasis, or when I put, I'll just speak in my own experience. When I put too much emphasis on overcoming the fear, it becomes a barrier. Like it gets bigger, it becomes pressurized. Whereas if I'm just like, oh yeah, I'm scared of, like in this realm of fear, I'm scared of like being far away and there being some kind of catastrophic world event or like earthquake or something that like will separate me from my loved ones forever or something, like I'll never be able to come back kind of thing. And every time I'm on a plane or I drive somewhere far away, this comes up and I'm like, okay, well, can't control it, just have to do my life anyway, can't, like, you know. And so I think when I've tried to control it, it becomes a story that it will definitely happen, you know. Whereas if I'm just like, oh, here's that familiar nagging thought that I have, and I guess I just have to do this anyway, because that could happen at any point of my life anyway, you know? It's a different creature.
Interesting. Totally. I mean, even there, like what you're describing, this is going to sound nitpicky, but like the topic of the week, the language that was used, and I'm sure that it probably wasn't meant this way, but the idea that you have to, that fear is something that you have to deal with is, you know, sort of feels like something that that one might have to do with their like rambunctious nephew or something, you know. It's like a control thing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas just like letting your fear like play out and have the room that it needs is maybe what you're describing with your fear of a bad event.
Yeah, but I mean, we're kind of talking about phobias or like, yeah, just like sort of out of nowhere anxieties, which is an important part of fear. But then at the same time, my goddaughter is really scared of slugs, and it's a phobia. And if she sees them, she like screams and cries and basically it means that she can't go outside right now. And in that instance, we're like her mom is doing a lot of like conditioning around kind of just like, okay, you're gonna see slugs and how are you gonna deal with it? You need to breathe, you need to remember that you're safe, you need to remember that they can't hurt you. And like the option is not that she can avoid slugs, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? And so yeah, I'm just agreeing with what you're saying.
Okay. Nice.
good point there, Smoke. Yeah.
Another point for me. I think that part of maybe the reason why this topic is like interesting to people who would be on this website listening to this podcast is also that fear is not just like, you know, some inert like biological response to stimuli. It's like also a thing that the state uses to its ends, mm-hmm. or whatever. So maybe like fear is like, you know, one thing that we could probably talk about like a lot and for a long time and get into the like whatever depth psychology of fear. Another thing we could talk about, and something that I was thinking about when I read this, was just like maybe one reason to figure out how to have a different response to fear is because society uses fear in all of these ways to control and manipulate and, you know, get us to buy into the fake life that it offers for us.
Mm-hmm. Like it uses fear of repression, fear of discomfort, fear of scarcity, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I think that a lot of people probably have jobs mm-hmm. Because they have a fear that if they don't, they'll go without. You know, maybe people are in certain kinds of relationships because they have a fear that if they aren't, then they'll be alone. Mm-hmm. And alone is bad or something, you know. Mm-hmm. Or alone also then exposes you to more insecurity or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then the fear of repression, totally. Like, fear that if you act in the way that is congruent with your desires, they'll put you in a box. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a comment in here that I liked that's like talking about rational versus irrational fear, you know, and maybe the examples we've used so far are irrational fears.
Interesting.
And rational fear is like more what you're talking about. Like it is, there are actual consequences to certain ways that you act, and like maybe that fear informs how you go about acting in the way that you want, right? And it's not that you can ever be unafraid of repression or something, but you can use the fear to figure out ways to maneuver that put you in less harm or make it so that you know what I mean?
Totally. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Taking precautions.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, there is one thing in the topic text that mentioned something about preparing for the worst or expecting the worst, and it sounded a little like something that we've talked about off the podcast before about negative anchoring. Mm-hmm. I wonder if you have any thoughts about that.
Like if you anchor negatively, then positive things can happen. It like makes space to be pleasantly surprised, kind of thing.
Yeah, or like maybe that's one way to, you know, have fear in your life is to just play all of the things out in advance that could go wrong. But all of the ways that your fears could be affirmed.
Yeah, yeah. The manifesting camp is like very upset right now, right? Yeah, I don't know. I think of that, like, at least for myself, negative anchoring, it's more like a joke that I have with myself where I'm like, oh, wow, there I am worrying again. It means, and then I like create it into a superstition to make it so the positive thing can happen. But nowhere am I fooling myself that I'm hoping that the positive thing is going to happen, even though I'm, quote, preparing for the worst thing. So it feels like actually not a way of accepting fear, you know, or accepting the bad consequence. It's like, okay, well, if I acquaint myself with the possibility of this bad consequence happening or something less desirable, then it creates space for the good thing to happen and for me to, be pleasantly surprised, and I can prepare for the bad thing. But some people would say that that's just you kind of praying for what you don't want to happen.
Yeah, and then, if the good thing happens, are you even prepared for
You can't win.
gosh. Yeah, no, you can't.
Yeah. I mean, I'm struck in this topic is that people are talking about action, like illegal acts. I mean, they sort of make allusion to sabotage or but and then it says don't be constrained by the obvious. So we went for earthquakes and ground bees, but I mean, there's not really. I don't know. Do you think of anything there? Like, imagine the worst that could happen and emotionally prepare for it. That would be negative anchoring, I think.
Yeah, totally. It seems more it seems more obvious than preparing for the positive.
Right, but that's like the sort of that's sort of the manifesting. I like I kind of feel stuck on that, maybe because of whatever my other life of sort of like toxic, like there's a lot of sort of herbal people or like wellness people or whatever who have like toxic positivity. And so I feel averse to that kind of attitude. But then it sort of infected me too a little bit, where I'm like, ooh, I want to think about something that I want to have happen, happening, I mean.
Yeah, totally. I could see there being a conflict between, on the one hand, trying to map out consequences, as a way to figure out how afraid you want to be. And on the other hand, being like, well, if I keep talking about it, then I sure am going to give this thought form power, thereby creating the very condition I wanted to avoid. I'm yeah, sure the therapist in the comments won't care for that one either.
The like great commentary and really kind communication in the comments must come from the therapists among us. People who really understand how to take responsibility for their feelings.
Zing. Ouch.
I guess maybe for practicality, what have we done? What? Okay, so there's a way that your ground beef fear didn't work because you're still afraid of them and you've accepted that, but there is a way that it did because you're not like n avoiding the forest floor or something, right?
Totally.
And so I think that is a helpful way to think about it because it's like, what does success in overlooking fear or like overcoming fear look like? It's certainly not being afraid, right? I don't think.
No, totally. And it's like in this process, I've, also learned to differentiate between what kinds of various critters in the wasp category do and how they act. And like the paper wasps, I can spot them from really far away now, and they don't really want anything to do with me. Obviously, the honeybees are on their own journey, as are the bumblebees. And the meat yellow jackets are just like the drunk drivers of the animal kingdom, and I don't think I could avoid them if I really wanted to.
Wow, so you're profiling. This is your response to fear.
Yeah,
I don't know if
I'm
I
just
can
doing
endorse
stereotypes, I guess.
that. That's okay.
God damn
Yeah. Well, I guess there's like, It's interesting. I like when I wanted to talk about this, I was like, oh, that's fun. We're talking about an emotional experience. But now that I'm actually talking about this topic of the week, I'm like, how do I talk about this without just airing all of my fears and talking about them? And I think it just helps me realize that I am so afraid of so many things and I can still live a pretty fulfilling life. So that's a good thing to inventory in myself.
Yeah, totally. I had the same thought, and I think that I started with an anecdote, and I think that it's good that we're talking about real fears, because I think there's a way that talking abstractly about fear feels like clinical or like Freudian or something. So, yeah, I don't know, you know, if that's like a helpful thought, but yeah, it's like if our options are talk about it in the way that like an anthropologist might, or talk about it as it actually shows up in our lives, I think the latter seems more interesting.
Definitely. Yeah, I agree. That being said,
what about the anthropology of fear?
I like that people were criticizing or just like actually discussing, Amor Fati, or however you say that, which I think is interesting. Like, and I can't remember who, a friend of mine recently was talking about how Stoic philosophy has like helped her navigate anxiety. In the sense of just being able to accept that negative things happen or hard things happen, but it is for some purpose. And I thought that was really interesting and not how I approach dealing with fear. But I feel I bring that up only to say that I just don't think there's, to state the obvious, that there's just not one way of navigating it, and different things are going to work for different people. So, and I actually have been really kind of pleasantly surprised by the comments, I guess, that people are not just saying like, suck it up, deal with it, which is kind of what I negatively anchored to the other Red Sea. Yeah.
What you were afraid of.
That was what I was afraid of. Or something. But and then
maybe or go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was just gonna say maybe that speaks to the credibility of the, like, you know, self-help Buddhist way of talking about experiences and feelings or something, that they just have to be sat with and reckoned with instead of got around or managed.
Yeah. Well, okay, let's go back to talking about the way that fear is like instilled in us, and maybe as a thought exercise of unwinding it. Like, that's another thing that works for people, right? Is being able to see where their fear came from and then unwinding it from there. Like, you were able to identify that you have this like visceral childhood memory of being swarmed and then being in pain, right? And it like got into your, wow, I can't believe I was about to say got into your hardwiring, but you built that's, I don't want to say that. You built character armor, basically, about it, if we're gonna go that way. Like, you figured out a way to deal with it, and you're able to move on. And so I think, yeah, so jail is a way, right, that fear is instilled in us, like the fear of being put separated from our people and our life, as we know it. Also death, probably.
Yeah.
Like
kind of like violent death specifically.
Yeah, like being imposed upon us, right? Yeah, I guess we don't need to enumerate all of the things to be scared of. People probably have that in them, but I'm like, this becomes like some reason to never do anything.
Totally. I think that just following your, what I think is maybe your train of thought, or maybe going a different direction with it. Sometimes when I'm like thinking about undertaking something sketchy, mm-hmm. I do like a quick little rundown and I'm like, okay, what am I actually afraid of? Is this a situation in which I could, you know, reasonably die a violent death? Yes, no. Is it, you know, just keep going down the tree? Like, is this mm-hmm. a situation in which I could reasonably like get locked up? Mm-hmm. Yes or no. And, you know, et cetera, things like that. And it does like help kind of like declutter the like initial like pang of gut fear or whatever.
Yeah. And also just being as prepared as you can and making sure that you're able to cover your tracks, so to speak, if you're doing something risky. Well, it's funny that you said that because I also I pulled up in the comments, someone quoted Dune's Litany Against Fear, which I liked. I'll read it. Yeah. I must not fear. Fear is the mind killer. Fear is the little death that brings total obliteration. I will face my fear. I will permit it to pass over me and through me. And when it has gone past, I will turn the inner eye to see its path. Where the fear has gone, there will be nothing. Only I will remain.
You know, well put, Frank Herbert.
But I don't know. I like that I will permit it to pass over me and through me. And then that gives you information. But sometimes I disagree that fear is the mind killer. Like, I also think there's reason. Like, it comes back to the rational versus irrational fear. I do think that there are obviously reasons to be afraid. And it doesn't make you stupid. You know, that's one way to interpret it. I know that what he means is it means that you're not able to think clearly, right? But I haven't read Dune, so just to out myself as a non-Dune reader, have you read it?
Nope.
Okay, well then we don't have any right to comment about it really, probably. Nope. But I like the quote. I know it from growing up.
Yeah, it sure sounds nice, whatever they're talking about.
Yeah. But I feel like they put their hands in some kind of like insane box that's like all the world's pain or something. Okay, now whatever. We digress. It just seems like there's things that's like a tangible thing to be afraid of.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. Well, I'm afraid I don't have much to say about this. I'm afraid of being perceived as uninteresting. But
afraid of disappointing our friends and not coming up with more interesting things to say.
Yeah. Well, I guess maybe that's what it is that like we, maybe as a culture, subculture, we're not interested in fear. Like we kind of value, I guess I feel like maybe there's a way that we are fancying ourselves as some kind of hero, right? Like that's kind of the dominant narrative of like US society or something, is that there are heroes who do things and we kind of fancy ourselves the anti-heroes or like the heroes of our own narrative. And so having fear permit you from not acting is like somehow being our own enemy. You know what I mean? Like it's really a disdained emotion. And I think in talking about this, I'm realizing that it is suppressed or it's like put in the corner, right? It's like, sure, yeah, everyone's afraid, but we don't want to talk about it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
And so maybe it does feel like a useful exercise to just talk about it because it's not talked about very often. So that is part of why I appreciated the topic also. it does feel like something that people have to admit that they're afraid. Or like, I notice that when people in moments of heightened activity, like, share that they're afraid, that I trust them more, that I I feel like more drawn to people who don't pretend to not be afraid, or who are, if I guess I associate people who will not admit that they're scared as like brazen and maybe a little bit dumb, honestly, like they're going to get me in trouble. Like I actually trust the people who are like, yeah, this is scary. I'm scared and I'm going to do it anyway. And I've prepared in these ways, you know?
Totally.
And that I find that to be a more, not only trustworthy, but like grounded place to communicate with people also. And like when we're thinking about collaborative illegal action, people who will just make it like a standard, like if anybody doesn't want to do this for any reason, there's no pressure to do it, you know, like it's okay if you're afraid, it's okay if you don't want to do it, like think about it, there's space for you to change your mind, kind of a thing.
I think that you're right, maybe about there maybe being like a culture of people having to be very brave, and in a lot of the stories that we read about people who are maybe our subcultural heroes, mm-hmm. there isn't always like a lot of space given to like, yeah, I was about to shit my pants the whole time that we were trying to do this, or you know, I was really really afraid. Maybe that's changing now, but like when I think about like that Enrico Arrigoni book, mm-hmm. Freedom, My Dream, there was kind of like a lot of like, yeah, look how awesome of an adventurer I am. And like, truly, you know, he was, and was taking really impressive risks, but I don't think there was like a lot of pages given, maybe, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe people will rectify this in the comments. I don't really remember a lot of it being like, yeah. And I was really afraid that this was going to happen. And I like thought about it and I talked to my peer about it or something, or even in like old man Ben Murray's new book, there's like a lot of tales of bravery, but not a lot of space given to talking about the behind the scenes fear that might have been going on.
I'm reading this Martin Sostre book, and you know, he got put in jail as like, I'm not all the way done with the book, but I think that there's parts where he's just talking about how he's bitter. He's like, I'm bitter that I got my life taken away from me. Like, he's a political prisoner. And I think that there's, of course, like a lot of space given to the incredible truth that they weren't able to break his spirit, as it should be, because that is amazing. I think he was in solitary confinement for years, like sleeping on a cement floor in his underwear, you know? And that is incredible. But I think also just being able to have people who can communicate their range of emotion, to me, makes them more heroic, impressive, admirable, et cetera. And I don't think that being like having fear detracts from the amazing things that people are doing, you know? And it's interesting that to me, it brings up the ways that we kind of sign off on like dominant society's bullshit of like not being able to have the full range of emotion, and that emotions are something to work through or not helpful or that kind of thing, right? The irrational being dismissed. But I think that practicing that is helpful, because I do feel like it informs my activities, at least, to be able to give space to and appreciate the feelings I have that are not valued by society, because they exist. And if you ignore them and suppress them, they sort of end up driving the car, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, they come out sideways.
Yeah. I mean, I love a good hero's tale. I'm not trying to like say that makes these people's stories invalid, but I'm just agreeing that we don't spend a lot of time on that. We kind of brush over it, but it could be a big part of everyone's reality, right? Anxiety, nervousness, fear.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, it's also the case that I think that there's a way that people try to integrate that kind of thinking into the conversation by, but it's more like kind of like a DIY ethos where they're like, how to prepare for prison or whatever. I feel like there's zines about that, or zines for how to, prepare for the possibility of solitary confinement. Or, here's like 10 workouts to do in your cell. Or things like that, that feel like ways of thinking around consequences that are supposed to maybe like, I don't know if diminish fear is the right word, or just set expectation is another way to talk about it, but.
Well, yeah, I feel like the only often, like growing up, I think that the way that we're able to measure that we're valid is if we end up in jail, right? Like that's the future you imagine or something. Or that one, like that sometimes people imagine is like, and even last week's topic, people were talking about, anything that's a threat ends you up in jail, kind of a thing. So it's like, or there's a possibility of that, which I'm not saying that's untrue, and I just it makes sense that there's fear and a hard time talking about that, right? Because intellectually we understand that we want to have a culture of resistance that includes jail support, that includes like people on the inside and the outside. And so to say that you don't want to act because of going to jail, sort of in a way, can be perceived that you're like abandoning that culture, right? Or you're not taking it seriously. But, or maybe that's how I felt in my 20s. I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like it totally. I feel like I run into expressions of that nature periodically.
It's hard to. Yeah, I feel like the long and short of it is you will be afraid and you can kind of prepare, work around that, take that into consideration and like make it part of your practice to notice if the fear is insurmountable and like whether you feel okay with that. Like it's okay to have an insurmountable fear. There's no objectivity here, right? And it's also work, it's we do have the ability to work through or work around or around fear, right? Like just use it to inform us and our activities, and that's fine as well. Would you say that that's the take-home point for our
Yeah,
conversation?
what a concise TLDR.
If you didn't listen, don't be afraid that you missed anything.
will be no consequences, or the consequences are ones that you can live with, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. I like that this person said that they freeze and they act and look suspicious. I do think that you can practice like exposure therapy to doing risky things like they said, start smaller, practice ahead of time. Like I think that it does become easier, like normalizing the more times you move through that space or get away with it or whatever, the easier it is to remember that you can, even if you are afraid. And I think that it's very, anybody who tells you that they weren't scared ahead of doing something is probably lying to you. And it's
Yeah,
kind of about
totally.
figuring out how to do that calmly without, as Smoke put it, shitting your pants, you know? Oh, oops. And yeah, we have a friend who talks about how you can tell when people are scared doing something and like painting, but they're doing it anyways, so is an important part of the process. Anything else you want to say? I think we could be done.
I feel unafraid to submit this to the rancor of my peers.
Yeah. I can't claim that, but I am feeling done. I hope y'all have a good day.
This week's podcast was sound edited by Rosinante and Echo. The What's New is written by Chisel, read by Chisel, and...
Oh, jeez.
We hope this podcast is useful to and fun for anarchists and the anarcho-curious.